mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, from wellness to finances, from personal growth to home and leisure, this week's Spring Veterans Empowerment Fair features resources to help those who have served live their best lives. We'll learn more about it. Also this morning, AI may be the biggest buzzword in technology these days, but with it comes potential cybersecurity issues, which is the second biggest buzzword in the world of tech innovation. And happening around town, summer safety lessons are on the agenda at Camp 911, and there's still time to sign your kids up for a full day of fun and learning. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. If you're having a little eclipse hangover, by the way, April's full moon and the Lyrids meteor shower will both happen this week. The April full moon is also known as the pink moon, and it will peak today, it says here. So does that mean the wee hours of this morning or overnight tonight into tomorrow? I always get confused and they say today. What does that mean? The moon isn't out today. It'd be tonight or last night. Anyway, the full moon, and I don't know why they call it the pink moon, but they do. The Lyrids meteor shower peaked yesterday. NASA says the moon may outshine the meteor shower, so for best viewing, get away from the city lights and look up, they say, which is, yeah, good advice. If you want to see something in the sky, look up. That's, anyway. Just thought I would mention that. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started here. Now, this, it's springtime. Everybody's getting out into the lawn and sprucing up the flower garden, making your home look nice, curb appeal, and all of that. While some may look down their noses at that neighbor, and we all have that neighbor, whose lawn is bursting with garden gnomes and pink flamingos and all of that sort of stuff. A new study says for some that whimsical decor is a key to feeling at home. Researchers from the University of Buffalo, who apparently had nothing better to do, studied 1,000 residents of the Elmwood Village suburb of Buffalo. It was named one of the 10 great neighborhoods in America. And so I guess they figured, hey, we've got one of the 10 great neighborhoods in America right in our backyard. Let's find out what makes it great. And they wanted to get to the bottom of residents expressing themselves in their front lawns. Long story short, the livelier and more open the front yard, the more the residents felt content with and connected to their home and, by extension, their neighborhood. The researchers call it a sense of place. The study concludes, and this is the quote, the study concludes that most elements that residents place in their front yard positively influence their sense of place, but that especially elements that afford sociability of the public-private interface have an outsized positive influence. The latter part is a bit of a mouthful, but it boils down to the more the resident expresses themselves with their front yard, whether we're talking, you know, pink flamingos or the garden gnomes that we mentioned, flower pots to sports flags, the more it opens social interaction with their neighbors, which also strengthens the local community. I'm thinking if you've got a bunch of pink flamingos in your yard, that may actually open social interaction with your neighbors who may tell you to get rid of that crap. No. But that opens social interaction with neighbors, strengthens local community. This is a confirmation of a study back in 1997, which showed that nearly 75% of friendships forged within neighborhoods started on the front lawn. So, just interesting stuff there as we get into spring and the outdoor lawn and landscape season. What else is going on in the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day? I love this story. A man in Louisville, Kentucky, claimed his lottery prize just hours after winning it. The Kentucky Lottery said the man has chosen to remain anonymous because you can do that in Kentucky. Can't do that in Ohio, but you can do that in Kentucky. Man has chosen to remain anonymous after winning $250,000 playing the Kentucky Cashball game. The reason that this story is noteworthy, and I bring it up, the win came in the middle of the man dealing with personal tragedy, the loss of his mother, the death of his mother. He had just returned, says he had just returned from her funeral late last month when he stopped at a convenience store and on a whim bought a couple of lottery tickets. And lo and behold, he comes up with $225,000 jackpot. That is all kinds of awesome. That I love stories like that. After taxes, the winning check was cut for $162,000. So, you know, he won $250,000, only got $162,000, which is a bit of a bummer there. But it's $162,000 that he didn't have when he started. So there was always that. And you know, talk about somebody who needed a bit of a lift. I just love that story. That's just that story. A couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. How about this? Women in the hospital are less likely to die if they are treated by female doctors. Let me repeat that. Women in the hospital less likely to die if they are treated by female doctors. That is according to a new study which also found that women were less likely to be readmitted to the hospital if they are treated by female doctors. Not only less likely to die, but less likely to relapse, have to be readmitted. The study was published yesterday in the journal Annals of Internal Medicine, which I never miss an issue. I don't know about you, but I never miss an issue of the Annals of Internal Medicine. The study found that among women age 65 and up, 8.15% treated by women died within the next 30 days, compared with 8.38% treated by male doctors. So the difference isn't huge. But if you are part of the 0.2-something percent, then it's significant to you. Getting rid of that gap could save 5,000 lives a year, the study says. There is no clear reason why women treated by female doctors survive longer or are more likely to survive. But other studies suggest it could be attributed to miscommunication and bias when it comes to women being treated by male doctors. So women, they say, are more likely to be completely open and honest with another female doctor, and women doctors are less likely to make certain assumptions about their female patients. Kind of interesting. But, I take away from that, if you're a woman, you're going into the hospital or you have a medical procedure, if you don't want to die, find a female doctor. That's what I hear them saying. Yeah. And speaking of men and women and the relationship between the two, this is an interesting question that was posed recently on Reddit, which is the online bulletin board. Not really a social media website, but more an online bulletin board. They have all kinds of different conversation threads and all of that. It's sort of a platform for asking and answering all sorts of questions, from the very useful to the inane. One user dropped an interesting question, and boy, did it spark a conversation on Reddit. This is the question. Knowing what you know now about life and about life with your spouse, knowing what you know now, would you marry your spouse again? Now that's opening a can of worms. As you might expect, all kinds of responses. Replies, though, were generally positive. I don't know what you would expect if I asked you that question. What would you expect? You say you think more people would say no or more people would say yes. Results were actually generally positive. One woman said, I got married at 19, or one man, I guess, said, I got married at 19. My wife was 18. We've been married for 27 years. Not only would I go back in time and marry her all over again, I would also marry her right now if we just met. Which, that's very sweet. Another person said, yes, I would. I have seen this man change for the better. He was already a great man without our little family and just the two of us, but especially now that we have a baby, he's become an even better man. I love that. It kind of gives you hope when you hear stories about that. Another person said, we've been married 18 years, and I would marry her again every day for the rest of my life. Now, not all of the responses were positive. Some of the other responses, there were a lot of no's. There were some hell no's. And then there were those who clearly just needed to vent at the question. No way. Been married for 18 years. If I knew he was going to need me to be his mother and fail to keep a decent job and gain 100 pounds, I would have run for the hills, one woman said. Another user kind of split the difference. I wouldn't marry at all, she said. I would stay single and work full time, take care of a few cats. But she did add, that said, I wouldn't trade my children for the world. And theoretically, I guess, you would need your spouse to have your children, or at least those children. You would anybody else's children. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. That is a loaded question. So think about that. If you could do it all over again, knowing what you know now, would you marry your spouse all over again? I would have to say that I would actually be more likely to marry my spouse, knowing what I know now. I have to admit, and my wife and I have had this conversation, we were both a little unsure going in at the time. But now, 34 years later, nearly 34 years later, I can honestly look back and say I made the right decision. I would marry her even more quickly now. And I did that. Anyway, there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories. I know that's kind of the sappingly sweet answer, but it's true. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. A chance of some rain today. It'll also be windy, a high around 60. Showers tonight, low in the mid-40s. A few weeks before the school year started, the Findlay Police Department put officers through active shooter drills at the high school. That training paid off last week when another swatting call or hoax call came in and officers rushed to the school. Lieutenant Welch says officers are trained to enter the school immediately and become the focus of the shooter.
If you can become the focus, that means he's not focused on hurting anybody within the school. Our safety becomes second to those that are within the school because we are prepared, we have trained, and we understand what we need to do to make that happen. So it's not something that's fun to think about, but we've all taken the oath that this is what we're going to do, and that's the way we're going to train.
You can see some video of Findlay Police going through active shooter training in this story on our website. Saturday is National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, and Officer Brian White with the Findlay Police Department says medications can be safely disposed of at a drop-off location at the Findlay Municipal Building.
Pretty simple process. You just drive into the City of Findlay Municipal Building parking lot. We'll come out to the car, take the medications, and you can drive on your way.
National Prescription Drug Take Back Day will go from 8 to noon Saturday in the Municipal Building parking lot. Get more details in the story on our website. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland has announced its 2024 inductees.
I want you. On Saturday, October 16th at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, 16 musical legends will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as members of the Class of 24. Big names include Cher, Foreigner, Mary J. Blige, Ozzy Osbourne, Jimmy Buffett, Peter Frampton, and Kool & the Gang. Several of this list made it as first-time nominees. The last time the induction ceremony was held in Cleveland was 2021. The event will be streamed live.
Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, from wellness to finances, from personal growth to home and leisure, this week's Spring Veterans Empowerment Fair features resources to help those who have served live their best lives. And the Hancock County Veterans Services Officer, Nicole Coleman, is with us in the studio this morning with all of the details. Nicole, thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
You do this, a couple of times a year?
Four times a year.
So it's one for every season.
Yep.
So some folks may be familiar, but for those who aren't, kind of give us an idea of what's going on here. And this is Saturday, right?
Yes. So this Saturday from 10 to 2 at Owens Community College here in Findlay. And we have 33 vendors who will be there, massage therapists, physical therapists, maybe some chiropractors. So the focus of this one is being physically ready for summer, okay. You know, so getting yourself well, healthy, ready for summer to get outside and get moving. And then hopefully having the mindset to continue that through fall and winter. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to focus on health, because with the Findlay Clinic, the Findlay VA Clinic opening this summer, mm-hmm. So we're bringing the Ann Arbor VA Medical Center Eligibility Office will be there on site, so they can answer questions about who's eligible to use the VA clinics. What is this transition going to look like if you're already a patient mm-hmm. within the Ann Arbor VA Medical Center? Or what if you use a different clinic and you want to start using the Findlay Clinic? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah.
So our staff can answer a lot of those questions here in the county, but we wanted to make sure that we had the people here who
right.
take care of the paperwork when we send it in to them. So mm-hmm. they will be there on site with us the whole day.
Now, I know we've talked about that, about this, the new VA clinic in the past. What are some of the more common questions that you're getting, or the uncertainty that people have about that?
Yeah, so people are asking, do I have to switch? No, you do not have to switch. So, mm-hmm. you know, you already have a primary care physician at another clinic. You're really happy with them. You don't want to switch? Absolutely, you do not have to. Mm-hmm. You will receive everyone who is registered in Ann Arbor who lives within a certain mile radius, I don't remember what it is, from where the Findlay Clinic is going to be, mm-hmm. will get a letter from the Ann Arbor system saying, you know, the clinic is going to be opening. Would you like to be assigned to the primary care team that will be in Findlay? And if you do, here's what you need to do. If okay. You don't need to take any action. So that's one of the other questions is, when can we notify the VA that we want to use the Findlay Clinic mm-hmm. or, you know, those types of things. Mm-hmm. Some of the other questions that people are asking is, if we switch to use the Findlay Clinic, will we still be able to use community care? And for the people who are listening and wonder, what does community care mean? That means that you're using someone who, a provider who is not a VA physician.
I see.
In our community. So for mm-hmm. example, maybe I go to physical therapy and the VA pays a local physical therapist to provide that service for me so that I don't have to drive to Toledo or Ann Arbor.
So kind of like a subcontractor.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And so people are asking, am I still going to be able to use the community care service? Yes, because this Findlay Clinic is only going to have primary care, mental health, and blood draw services. That's mm-hmm. that's all that it's
that's
going
the
to
extent
offer.
Of it.
Now, there may be some people who are using mental health providers through community care. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure what that's going to look like.
Well, one of the questions, maybe.
Right. So we can ask those questions on Saturday.
Yeah.
Rest assured, I will be asking that question on Saturday because I know that that's one thing we don't have an answer for yet.
Yeah.
But I don't think that this is going to have any, I can't think of any negative impact that this is going to have on any of our veterans who live locally. Simply because we get to make choices. Mm-hmm. You know, we have options.
Yeah, more options is never a bad thing.
Right.
And as far as all indications are that this is still on schedule to open in the summer.
Correct, yes. Right now they are estimating it will open in August.
Okay. So obviously that's going to be one of the key draws of the Empowerment Fair. But like you said, there are an awful lot of other resources, and that's kind of the idea behind these events that you do multiple times a year.
Right. So we bring in, local social service agencies, financial planners, health insurance providers, lots of different agencies to answer people's questions. And this time, and we usually do have a keynote speaker as well. Our keynote speaker this time is Jim Steffen, America's Fun Fitness Coach.
The fitness and wellness theme, and I know you know Jim very well.
I do, and I anticipate he'll be standing on a ball for some portion of this. If you want to Google him, Google Jim Steffen, 2 E's, in Jay Leno, and you can see him on the Jay Leno show.
Yeah. And he's been on American Ninja Warrior, too, and all of that. Yeah, Jim's well-known within the community and outside the community, even. And we've said this before. If he can't get you motivated to get moving, then nobody can.
Then nobody can, yes.
Because he is a master motivator.
That is so true.
So the event is on Saturday, as you mentioned, from what, 10 to 2?
10 to 2 at Owens. We will have coffee and donuts. Not that donuts are, the healthy morning breakfast.
But you'll be able to work them off.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
You're going to walk, move them around.
There'll be special donuts that are not bad for you.
No calories. No calories in these donuts. And then we will have lunch. Jim is speaking at 11:30. So if you want to be there, in the around 11 o'clock, you can talk to some of the vendors, be there for his presentation, eat some lunch, and then talk to the rest of the vendors when you're done.
And folks don't have to register for this.
No.
It's open to all.
Yes.
And bring family?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The last one, we had quite a few kids there, and I loved that. That was one of the things I commented on was just, this is a family event. We want people to be there and feel welcome to come. And also, if you are the parent of or the sister of or the aunt or the uncle or grandparent of someone who's currently serving or has served, and you just want to come to get some information, maybe they're being a little stubborn about taking advantage of some benefits.
I can't imagine that would ever happen.
We veterans are never stubborn, ever. That actually is what we spend the majority of our time doing, is talking to family members who are trying to get their loved ones who are veterans to come and talk to us.
Yeah.
So we provide some ideas on how you can maybe encourage them to come and see us.
And we kind of chuckle about that, but that has some serious implications as well, especially when it comes to things like mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mental health and physical health, when we're in the service, often we're taught to, rub some dirt on it and keep going.
Power through.
During that time of your life, that is important and valuable. When you're in the middle of a combat zone or even just in a training exercise, that's what you need to do. But there also are times when you need to learn how to take care of your physical body and your mental well-being. And so that really is why we do these quarterly veteran empowerment fairs.
And why you use the word empowerment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That is what it is an opportunity for veterans to feel empowered to live their best life. And the other thing is, a lot of times veterans feel alone, they feel isolated, they feel disconnected. And when we can get them in a room with other veterans, they remember that they're not alone. And that's my favorite part of these empowerment fairs, is watching veterans who don't know each other connect and then leave as friends.
Yeah. The Spring Veterans Empowerment Fair at Owens is happening Saturday, 10 to 2. We've got a link on our webpage for more information. Go to goodmornings.net and you'll find it there. Again, Hancock County Veterans Service Officer Nicole Coleman with us this morning. Nicole, thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, without question, AI is the biggest buzzword in technology right now, and every day it's being deployed in new and innovative ways. Businesses especially are realizing this tremendous potential of AI, especially when it comes to furthering innovation and enhancing consumer experiences. But with that potential comes potential cybersecurity issues, which is maybe the second biggest buzzword in technology these days. With us this morning is Dr. Nataraj Nagaratnam, IBM Fellow and Chief Technology Officer for Cloud Security. And Raj, it stands to reason that this would be a concern given the vast amounts of data that go into creating any kind of AI experience. Is this something that is being overlooked in this equation?
Good morning, Chris, and thanks for the opportunity. You're absolutely right in terms of data powering AI, and cybersecurity is an important aspect of it. I wouldn't say it is overlooked. It's definitely being looked, and every conversation we have with customers, and IBM is definitely focusing on security of the data as well as trust, transparency of these AI systems. So there is so much needed, and we are definitely doing more. As an industry, we are coming together to address these things as we move forward. But you're absolutely right. It cannot be emphasized more.
Yeah.
We need to keep focusing on it.
So what do these organizations need to take into account when deploying AI?
I would say when it comes to AI, especially generative AI, like conversational chatbots that people build, ultimately these AI applications are powered by a thing called models. These large language models are trained with tremendous amount of data, and they gain their skills, the knowledge based on such data. And the AI is as good as the data it is trained on, if you can kind of think about it.
Right.
So in that context, models, people should start to look at what data it is trained on and all that good thing. Think about it as nutrition labels. We look at the food before we consume food. We look at the nutrition label in the back of a cereal box or a drink, and to look at sugar or calories or iron and all protein and so on and so forth. Similarly, looking at the nutrition label of a model is important, so that the choosing the model should be based on who built it, where is the data coming from, how has it transformed over time, et cetera, et cetera. That's one part of it. The other is, while the model is powering the AI applications, data is the natural resource. Data is the one that is getting infused so that you can have contextual conversation or assistant in the context of chatbots, for example, right? So protecting the data is utmost important as well. So between choosing the model that is trust and transparent and trustworthy, as well as the provider that provides security and privacy and compliance to your data, is an important choice businesses should make.
And you reference the word compliance, and there are kind of two levels to that, really. Compliance in the sense of making sure that you're only using data the way you tell your customers you are going to use data. And then there is compliance in the sense of the way regulations require you or alternatively prohibit you from using data.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that context, we provide technologies. You touched on an important part, compliance and data together, right? So IBM's policy and philosophy has always been, and strategy, is your data is yours. Not only is that a policy and a strategy level, we have actually infused that into our cloud platform. In IBM Cloud, you can have the level of technical assurance that customers can say their data is theirs only. Even IBM cannot see it, right? Because we have leveraged the experience, the technology from our mainframe all the way to the cloud, built into hardware that makes that possible. So data security is at the heart of it, even including technologies like confidential computing, like you can compute things confidentially.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is the compliance that you talked about. It's not only about, your door's locked and the window's closed and essentially in the digital world, how are you running your application? Have you fixed your vulnerabilities and all of that? Staying compliant is important. It's one thing to say, hey, I'm compliant, and you pass an audit one day, and 6 months later, that somebody else comes in.
Yeah.
But the important part is to have the level of customer confidence. You need to stay compliant. So continuous compliance, we provide technologies, dashboards, and automation that customers can use to stay compliant as well.
Obviously, we also have to be mindful of the fact that deploying artificial intelligence means storing data that will be used by AI in the cloud. Is that, and again, this is still for many businesses something of a new thing, the idea of storing data in the cloud versus locally where I always have control of it. So is deploying cloud-based data storage part of the challenge or part of the solution?
It is part of the solution. And broadly speaking, the solution is hybrid, right? Because every business have their own risk appetite, and therefore they make choices based on that. And we make it possible because of hybrid cloud. We talked about hybrid cloud and executed on it and delivered on it even before the rest of the industry even talked about it, right? So in that context, not only hybrid cloud, but when it comes to AI, AI can be anywhere, leveraging hybrid cloud. So AI runs on hybrid cloud, and in turn, hybrid cloud can be fueled by AI. Therefore, you can put the right set of controls to protect your data and your applications and AI, leveraging the hybrid cloud platform and the AI platform from IBM.
So what are the first questions the business owners and managers need to ask when it comes to ensuring that they are not shortchanging security when preparing to roll out these artificial intelligence initiatives in whatever capacity they are using AI?
It's a very good question. I would say they need to take a data-centric approach to their security and compliance, because one size doesn't fit all. It's about the risk, and data is at the heart of it. So depending on the sensitivity of the data, they need to figure out how the data is protected, how is the application that is a window to the data is secured, and then when you now combine that with the models of AI and deliver AI applications like chatbots, you make the right decisions, and we make it possible from IBM. For example, NatWest is a large a bank in UK, Ireland, and they use our AI technologies to enable their chatbot Cora. Similarly, a large bank like BNP Paribas or Citi, when they use their applications and want to do payment in France or do risk modeling, they use IBM technologies, including our IBM cloud and the AI platform with watsonx.
Again, Dr. Nataraj Nagarjanam, IBM Fellow, Chief Technology Officer for Cloud Security. Real quickly, where do folks learn more about all of this and, you know, things that they need to keep in mind, again, when they're exploring the possibilities and the uses of AI?
Yeah, they can go to ibm.com/cloud. We will across be it a hybrid cloud information, our AI platforms, and how we have enabled customer journeys. That's one-stop shop for them to learn.
Raj, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a good day.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Dateline Santa Monica, California, where a man is under arrest after allegedly setting up a shopping cart as a barbecue to cook some meat. It's a shopping cart as a fire pit. And moreover, when he was cooking the whatever it was that he was cooking up, he used a sword as a skewer. So all kinds of things that are a problem here. Happened over the weekend. The cart was filled with burning wood, which the man then tried to stoke by pouring beer onto the flames. He faces misdemeanor charges for allegedly stealing the shopping cart, reckless burning of an open flame in public, and resisting arrest. Santa Monica police say he likely will not face a weapons charge for the sword. So there is that. Must have been quite a scene. Obviously not at the, I don't believe it was the at the store. That was the first question that I had. Was it, did he do this at the store? Did he have a shopping cart at the store? No, he stole the shopping cart. So I don't know if it was there along the Santa Monica Pier, the beachfront, or that would seem to be the place, because weird things happen sometimes. Santa Monica Pier. Speaking of people with unusual weapons, a man who is allegedly armed with a pickaxe is behind bars after he barricaded himself in a home in North Las Vegas. Police say the 51-year-old man got into a fight with his neighbor on Saturday night and at some point grabbed the pickaxe. When officers got there, the man retreated to his home and refused to come out until Sunday morning. This is a several-hour standoff here. He finally surrendered peacefully, but he is facing several charges, including assault with a deadly weapon, obstructing an investigation, and even attempted murder with the pickaxe. No one apparently was hurt, at least not seriously, in the incident. A pickaxe. That's when you know your neighbor means business, when he goes after the pickaxe. Not to be outdone, and this from the International File, the broken news, a woman in the UK has been sentenced to community service after threatening her neighbors with a samurai sword. But she had a good reason, and I have to say that I can commiserate with this woman. Apparently, she was upset with her neighbors for failing to clean up after their dog. Man, I hate that. But I do not have a samurai sword, so I can't do anything about it, I guess. The incident was the culmination of a dust-up with a neighbor and her daughter that at one point saw the defendant, 30-year-old Rebecca Lowe, being punched and dragged down her driveway, according to local news reports, the Manchester Evening News. The boyfriend of one of the women entered into the fray, prompting Ms. Lowe to pull out her samurai sword, which changed the paradigm quite a bit, I would imagine. Ms. Lowe apparently has a record. She was previously sentenced to 18 months back in 2020 for pulling out a knife on a 16-year-old boy who allegedly smashed her car window. For some reason, this woman, Rebecca Lowe, has a number of problems with her neighbors. This is not the first incident here. The judge went easy on Ms. Lowe this time, sentencing her to 12 months of community service and mandatory therapy, given that she was not the one who started the fight in this case. The neighbor and her daughter received warnings for their assault against Ms. Lowe, and I would imagine that somebody is looking for a new place to live. or someone should be looking for a new place to live. It's just, my. I mean, if you live in that neighborhood, though, I mean, it's like free entertainment, isn't it? I mean, it's crazy. Also from the International File, the broken news, doctors in Australia, and you wouldn't think that they would have to issue this type of notice, but doctors in Australia are urging snake bite. Let's try that again. Doctors in Australia are urging snake bite victims. I can't spit it out here today. Doctors in Australia are urging snake bite victims not to bring the snake that bit them to the emergency room. You would think this would go without saying, but the victims apparently believe that bringing the snake with them will help doctors determine the best treatment for the bite. But medical experts say it only makes matters worse. For one thing, professional snake catcher Jonas Murphy tells the Australian Broadcasting Corporation the patient risks getting a second bite, not to mention what could happen if the snake gets loose in the hospital. Yeah, that would be bad. That would be bad, I would think. Dr. Jeff Isbister. Dr. Jeff Isbister is a clinical toxicology researcher at the University of Newcastle, adds that hospital staff are not trained to identify snakes, but they can administer tests to determine how to treat the victim. So it's not necessary to bring the snake because the doctors probably don't know what kind of snake it is anyway. And while you're at it, avoid applying a tourniquet or cutting the wound or trying to suck out the venom. It's not something that you need to do. Whatever you do, don't bring the snake that bit you to the emergency room with you. Some good advice there. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this also from the International File, a Belgian man beat a drunk driving rap when it was determined that he has ABS. You think ABS, automatic braking system, right, on your car. But no, that's not what we're talking about. ABS, in this case, is an extremely rare condition called autobrewery syndrome. Lisa Florin, a clinical biologist with the Belgian hospital AZ St. Lucas, tells news reporters that people with ABS produce the same type of alcohol found in alcoholic drinks, but without the side effects. So they have alcohol in their system that are not actually drunk. So that's pretty convenient, isn't it, to have ABS, as you would think? But before you get any ideas, the victim in this case was checked out by three different doctors who all confirmed that he has the condition. Is it extremely rare? Do not try this at home. Oh, wow, got out of a drunk driving charge. There you go. That is today's broken news, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Help DEA keep our community safe and healthy by participating in National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, Saturday, April 27th. Take action right in your own home by cleaning out your medicine cabinet of unneeded medications. Keep them safe. Clean them out. Take them back. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeback.com.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So we are coming up on summer vacation season. A lot of folks will be traveling. You may be flying to your destination. And a new study, this was actually compiled by the gambling website casino.ca. So it's a Canadian gambling site. But kind of interesting they put this together. And I say it's a study, not a survey, because they analyzed data rather than going out and asking people about this. But they wanted to find the most and least wallet-friendly airports in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, so North America, the most and least wallet-friendly airports. And we're talking about major airports, so they didn't include, like, Toledo Express or Dayton, you know, airports that are small. They're talking about major airports. And the number one least wallet-friendly, they included menu prices from restaurants at the airport, parking rates listed on the airport websites, and hotel accommodations from booking.com. So if you have to stay over for a layover. So the study listed San Diego International Airport as the least wallet friendly. Let's see here. San Diego topped the list as most expensive, with an average hotel stay, parking, and one pint of beer running $574. Wow. Denver International Airport came in at number two, followed by Nashville at number three. The rest of the top 10 most expensive airports: Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport in Florida, Ronald Reagan Washington National in D.C., the Honolulu Airport, Daniel Inouye International Airport, JFK in New York City, LaGuardia, Newark Liberty International in New Jersey, and Vancouver International rounded out the top 10 of the least wallet-friendly airports. On the other end of the scale, the top 10 most wallet-friendly airports, or least expensive, San Jose International was at the bottom of the list as the least expensive. Houston Hobby Airport, Guadalajara International, Monterrey International, and Tijuana International, all in Mexico, are in the bottom 10. Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, Raleigh-Durham International, Oakland International, Dulles in Washington, and St. Louis International were the top 10 least expensive airports. So, happening around town, it won't be for another several weeks yet, but summer safety lessons on the agenda at Camp 911, and there is still time to sign your kids up for this. Beth Baker from the Findlay Fire Department is with us in the studio this morning, and we were mentioning earlier, still time to sign your kids up for a day of fun and learning, but it's more than just one day, right?
Yes, it's actually 4 days.
Okay.
We have an AM and a PM session for the kiddos, but 4 days of fun with local first responders and other safety.
So what is this? And the dates are June 10th through the 14th.
Yes.
Which seems like a long way in the future, but is going to be here before you know it, as you well know in preparing for this. But camp is filling up. So.
It is. We have very few spots left in the morning session, which runs from 8 to 11. So if anybody's interested in that, get in there now.
Yeah.
But the afternoon session, I have quite a few left open. Sign up and come hang out with us.
So, first of all, Camp 911 is designed for kids of what age?
Kids going into kindergarten.
Okay.
We like to give those kiddos some school experience, kind of help them get ready for kindergarten in the fall. So that's who we target right now.
And give us an idea of what they're going to be doing over the course of these 4 days.
We have so much fun with these kids. We have Findlay police officers there. Of course, I have to plug the fire department. Mm-hmm. We have awesome firefighters there helping us out. The sheriff's office comes. So they're learning lessons with all of those people. We have fire safety, stranger danger. We learn about seatbelts and nutrition from the health department. One of the newer things we've added is the ninja course with FRC. So we're helping kids just realize their emotions and how to regulate those.
Okay.
So we're growing over the years and trying to plug in new things that we're finding kids need help with.
And these are all hands-on activities. And it's very active. They're not just sitting listening to people talk.
No, you cannot do that with those that age. They have to be moving. So a lot of these sessions are only about 15 minutes long. So in about 3 hours span, we're hitting a bunch of topics. Mm-hmm. So we keep them hustling.
Give us some examples of some of the things that some of the activities that they'll do, you know, in conjunction with some of those lessons that you're trying to impart.
I'm going to tell you what my favorite day is.
Okay.
It's Wednesday. We have a dispatcher for 911 come in. They teach the kids how to talk to a dispatcher if there's an emergency.
Interesting.
Hanco comes in. They teach hands-only CPR because a kiddo that age could really be helpful.
I hadn't really thought about that. But that's and I would imagine a lot of fun hands-on for the kids as well.
They get in there and they learn that they're capable of helping people. Tommy Trojan comes in at the end of the day, plays with the kids, but he ends up having a little bit of an emergency. He falls down and gets hurt.
Okay.
So we teach the whole group as a whole. So imagine 105-year-olds in this big room. We're trying to settle them down, help them know that maybe they're not a helper right now, but the way they can help is to stay calm and to be quiet and let the helpers help.
Mm-hmm.
So Hanco comes in with a cot, takes Tommy Trojan up to the stage, and the ER trauma team is there, and they walk the kids through what's going to happen at the hospital, and that kiddo who is helping Tommy Trojan finds out what happens to them. Because that's a scary thing. If a kiddo's with an adult that gets hurt, what's going to happen to them?
It's interesting you mention that, because I'm thinking, I guess this is something that we don't really consider. So it's good that you're thinking in these terms, that when something scary happens, that can be very, very frightening. So kind of taking some of that mystery out of it for the kids.
They know what to expect. Mm-hmm. They know those people or those helpers are coming to help them.
Yeah.
And they know how to handle the situation.
Yeah. So like we said, this is 4 days of all kinds of fun. What do folks need to know if they want to sign their kids up for this?
Yeah, the best place to go is to all of our Facebook pages. So Camp 911, Findlay Fire Department, Findlay Police Department, the Health Department. You can find all of that information there, or the Sheriff's Office should have that information as well. Or you can give me a call at the fire department.
Okay.
And I will be happy to help you.
And is there a cost involved?
No, it is all free. We have been blessed with so many donors. The Hancock Fire Association this year, the last golf outing, generously donated to us, so we are able to keep providing camp for free.
Terrific. And by the way, this is all happening at First Presbyterian Church.
Yes, that's correct.
That's the location for Camp 911. Again, it is coming up in June, but don't wait, because the spots are filling up fast, and there is a limited number. You can only take so many kids, so which any parent of a five-year-old will understand. And by the way, also, I notice you're still looking for volunteers.
Yes, we will take some teenage volunteers. I love high schoolers. They're a big help. They basically stay with a group of kids and get them from point A to point B throughout the day, and just help us keep track of everybody.
That's what I was going to ask. You know, what role do the volunteers play? Because for the lessons and the workshops and the stations, that's really all from the first responders themselves.
So we need those extra hands to help.
And if somebody wants to volunteer or learn more,
just give me a call at the fire department, or that information is on all of those same places.
Okay, we have all of that info linked up at our webpage too, at goodmornings.net, for Camp 911 coming up in June for kids heading into kindergarten the following fall.
Yep.
Very good. Again, Beth Baker with the Findlay Fire Department with us this morning. Beth, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, marking Child Abuse Prevention Month, with the alarming statistics and the recognition that we all have a role to play in keeping kids safe. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.